Besiyata d'shmaya, every year we try to take a different alchet to try to understand a little bit more deeply. So when we say the alchet on Yom Kippur, we have a little bit of an understanding of what we're actually asking for forgiveness for. Meretz Hashem, this year we'll look at the alchet, alchet shechatanu fanecha b'sikur ayin, which the way Rabbi Artscroll translates it is for the sin with prying eyes. We take a look at the article Vidui. We have been curious to see what does not concern us, especially to see things that incite lust. And that's how what he says, we've been guilty in gazing at forbidden things. We have made eye contact with fellow sinners to indicate moral support for one another. By raised eyebrows or other eye motions, we have indicated disapproval of somebody, refining the art of character assassination. Haras Derech notes this as well. Yustaklut Asura, Kritzat Ayin, Shalgaivor, Leitzanos. Sometimes we can make expressions with our eyes, which are signs of arrogance, signs of mockery, without saying a word. And that's what Sikur Ayin is about. Perhaps the most major part, aside from that being a very important element of what we do with our eyes, the motions that we make, the Sikur Ayin is about gazing at forbidden things. And generally, it's about gazing at things that are going to incite lust. Rav Meiselson in his Sefer on Vidui adds to this by saying that there are all different levels of gazing that's forbidden. For example, on Ibishat Doch Kohen, source 2, Veino Milaveu Hashem Evakesh Menu. You see a poor person in need, you don't offer assistance until he asks for it. Further, he says, Sadeu B'Shabbat, you look at something on Shabbat and say, oh, you don't have to fix that window. I wonder why you call. That's also gazing of forbidden. Chametz, at the time it's usher, looking at a letter of that belongs to a friend. You see a lost object and you ignore it. You know, you don't bother picking it up and seeing who to return it to. The behemat chaveiro nofelu badera feimekima. You see your friend in need. Their donkey fell, and you don't bother to help them. You see svarim or other food that's thrown in a way of bizayon on the floor, and you don't pick it up. When you have opportunity to say a bracha on a king or chachamim, and you don't say the bracha. To look at balei chayim, to look at animals, and not learn from their ways. And again, he has a lot more here, but that's, one can look at it in detail. But we see that it has to do with sight, with eyes. And we know, as the Tifat Chaskud and Shir Sinaim in source number 4 points out, well, Sefer on eyes, he points out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this gift. We say every morning, Pokeach Ivrim, that Hashem opens our eyes. It's a gift of sight. And we have to be very careful that we take that gift that Hashem has given us and we utilize it for the good, to take that very gift that Hashem has given us and to rebel with that gift. It's really a chutzpah, and that's what we say, Alchet shechatanu fanecha b'sikur ayin. Hashem, you gave me the gift of eyes, and I've used it to look at forbidden things. I've used it to ignore my friend who's in need. I've used it in inappropriate ways, and not taken opportunities that have been presented to me. And we know Hashem never gives us something that's beyond us to withstand, and therefore our eyes are in our ability to be able to control. Let's try and understand a little bit, because there are quite a number of alchet having to do with eyes, Einayim Ramot, Saras Ayin. Let's try and understand a little bit of what the idea of the eyes are all about, what this alchet is about, and be able to try to get to, which we need to do with every sin, what's the root of the sin, how we can deal with the root of the sin, and what kedurim, what fences we can create for ourselves to be able to withstand these challenges. So Rav Lugassi, in his Sefer in Ayin Tova, points out in Source 5, Ha'ayin shel adam domeh l'matzlema. The eye of a person is like a camera. He mitzalemet kol davar shu ra'eh. It takes a picture of everything he says that you see. Just like the ear is something that takes in all the sounds. Kol marot she'adam ro'eh v'chol ma shehu shomeh nirshamim ba'ofen otomati b'mocho shel adam v'nikachim b'nafsho. Whatever we see automatically is entered into our brain and is engraved in our heart. ולפי אמרות והשמועות, כך פועל על הנפש, and that impacts us on who we are. אדם יכול לראות תמונה מסוימת, נדמה לו שלא הושפע ממנו. We can see a picture, and we think we're not influenced by it. אך כעבור שנים רבות תפעל תמונה זו, but after many years, we see its impact. And we know, כל מעשי אדם נפעלים על ידי תמונות והצלילים. We're affected, the way we act, by our חושים, by our senses. And therefore, איפה שכאשר אדם מסוים אומר שעליו לא מושפע שום דבר, a person says, "Lo mashpia shum davar, I'm not affected. I can read magazines and I can look at pictures and it doesn't affect me." He says, this is similar. It's a big mistake. And it's similar to someone who says, you know, I can drink poison and it's not going to make any impact on me. Everything we hear, everything we see is something that is registered, whether consciously or subconsciously, and will come out in ways that we can't even begin to imagine. You know, perhaps an innocuous example, but an example nonetheless that really brought this to the fore, happened to be just this week. Someone was showing me, a friend of mine who's a psychologist, was showing me these Coke pictures of, you know, different cards which have pictures which are drawn a little bit, you know, open for interpretation, like sketches, for the patient to be able to tell the story of what they see in the card. I'm not a psychologist, I don't know how to use them. So, when looking through the pictures, I noticed that one of them, I said to this person, I said to my friend, this reminds me of Madeline. Now, I don't know if any of you can relate to that example. Madeline was a book that I must have read over 40 years ago. Have I thought about Madeline in these 40 years? The answer is no. But suddenly, out of the blue, 40 years later, Madeline comes to my head. So, okay, it's an innocuous example, perhaps. However, it made such an impression on me, particularly in line with having just learned this source, of the things that are in the, you know, deep recesses of my mind that why would I bring out? But all my experiences as a child, what I read, what I saw, are part of me and can come out in different experiences, you know, 40, 50 years later. He brings down here at the end of Source 5, there's a Minhag Yisrael that's brought down in the Rokeach that I've still seen in Eretz Yisrael today, is that people will wrap a child in a talus and bring them to Cheder, to learn Aleph for the first time, where they're completely enwrapped in this talus. It's like a walking Sefer Torah, it looks like. So they shouldn't say anything on the way to the Cheder. And again, it's in order to, that their eyes should start with purity. The first thing they see is the Aleph Beis, the learning of Torah. This is a very beautiful minhag, but it's predicated on the fact that this child, for the first 3 years, hasn't seen anything at home. That this child hasn't been, you know, kids now don't, you know, they are savvy on electronics at a very young age. Who knows what they've seen? So we have to understand that things make an impression on children at a very young age, and we have to be aware of this. And that's why Chazal were hikpidu, shafilu abibi fnei ish rashasur, hatatza bevadu lalazi. To look at the face of a rasha, even a picture of a rasha, can have a negative effect on a person. How careful we have to be, everything that we see. And indeed, as Rav Weisman points out in Source 6 in Haras Derech, mahu mabat, what is to look? One inappropriate thing that a person sees could destroy a person forever. You can make an impression that it's engraved on a person. And we've seen this ourselves, the kocha shel ayin, the power of seeing something. A kid can see something on somebody's phone, an inappropriate picture, can see it for a second. It can lead to lo aleinu hidar derut. We've seen this happen where people go down the slippery slope of just seeing something once. They become addicted to it. They see more and more. They have a desire to see more and more. This is the power, the negative power, if we're not careful with our eyes. And indeed, the Haras Derech continues, and he says, if you take a look at history, it began with eyes. Vatera Isha, the woman saw that the tree was beautiful. Right? The Meraglim sit with their eyes. You see this over and over again, that if people aren't able to control what they see, it can lead to failure of the world. It can lead to tremendous sin. And particularly in our generation, as Rav Galil points out in Tiva Torah, based on the Sadiqei Emes, Shebedarenu Chozrim Begilgulim, and the Shemo Shayu Bedor Amabu. Our generation, we return, the Gilgulim, we are our generations, the reincarnation of the souls of the time of the Dur HaMabul, generation of the flood. Shenamar Bahem, about whom it is said, Kishriko Basar Dako, that they all perverted their ways. And we see this, that wherever we go, on the street, wherever we turn, we have the ability to come in contact with things that are inappropriate to see. And this is our Kol Tzav Vishal. You know, having gone to America quite a number of times last year, I see that the billboards have become more sophisticated than when I was in America growing up. You know, instead of having one-dimensional, now they're three-dimensional. And they change, and they're, you know, more colorful, and they're coming at you. It's inappropriate. These are things that are surrounding us at all times. We're living in a door where you can't go into a store. You can't go walk down the street without being bombarded with so many things that are mamish a perversion, mamish back to the Dur HaMabul. And we know, as the Zichron Chazkut, Rav Tzvi Meir Zilberberg Shlita points out in 8a, that if a person sees that when they come to learning Torah, and they come to davening, and they see mistamnim mocho v'libo, that their heart and their mind are closed, and they don't understand the word of what they're learning, and they don't feel anything, yidal nechod, they can almost be rest assured, shesharashoh chesronohu ba'ayin, beinayim shelo nishmeru kafi haro'i. If you're not going to guard your eyes appropriately, and you're not going to make sure to see positive things, so then it's no wonder that when you look at the words of holiness, you look at the words of Torah, you look at the words of Tefillah, they're not going to impact you. They're not going to spark you, because you have abused this vehicle, which could be in Zohar, it could be an awakening. You've abused it and used it to see things that are inappropriate. Umida tova meruba, shekol mashu afilu kechud asara. And the opposite is true. The more a person works on themselves to have shmira and tahara, to that extent, the Kaddish Baruch Hu is going to bless them. And this is the idea by Noach. We spoke about the Dur HaMabul. The Noach matzachein b'nei Hashem and Epi. Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. Shimei naim b'kedushatam. If the eyes are eyes of holiness, b'vchinat einei Hashem, like godly eyes, then you metzias zochim u'metzias chein. You find favor in Hashem's eyes. And this is our challenge. Our challenge is that we have to realize that our eyes are not really ours. They're given to us as a gift from Hashem. And the eyes are the windows of the soul, and how careful we have to be able to use these eyes as vehicles to come closer to Hashem, to use these eyes for Torah, for Tefillah, for Dvarim Shebe Kedusha. And we know when one does this, one is protected by the schus of Yosef Atzadi, not to be affected by an ayin hara, that he is alei ayin, above the eyes, so to speak. Indeed, this alchet, alchet shechatanu fanecha b'sikor ayin, by gazing at things that are inappropriate, is mamshalav in the Torah. The Chumash tells us, v'lo tatur acharei levavchem v'acharei inechem. Source 10, acharei levavchem is heresy. V'acharei inechem is gnosis, immorality. That we're not allowed to allow our eyes to see things that are going to incite us for lust, for immoral thoughts and behavior. Now, I'm going to pause here for one moment. A woman is listening to this and saying to themselves, well, that's very nice. I mean, it's not really very nice, but I understand what you're saying, that we should be seeing things that are inappropriate. Is this sheer not more directed to men than to women? Women don't really have a problem with seeing, you know, immodest things, right? To see a woman dressed immodestly, it's not going to affect her, right? So how is this relevant to us? So there's a piece we've discussed before, which is part of a larger topic, but I'll make mention of it. Rav Pinkas Atzal and Nefesh Chaya, where he's speaking about a person wrote a letter to Elal in the old days before they have individual screens, where it's one screen saying it's really inappropriate that they showed a movie that wasn't, you know, appropriate to show. And he ended by saying, obviously, I didn't see this, my wife saw this, and, you know, I'm commentating on it. And Rav Pinkas' response is very strong. He says it makes no difference. The wife saw it, the man saw it. In fact, it may be even worse that the wife saw it. And he notes here in 11, here's the difference between a man who sees an objectionable movie, Chas V'Shalom, and a woman who sees one. For the man, seeing such a thing puts a personal stain on his neshama. He has a neshama kedosha because he learns Torah and keeps mitzvot, and seeing such a movie creates an ugly stain on it. When a woman sees such a movie, it's not just a stain on her neshama. Rather, the movie represents who and what she is. She is now reflecting what she sees in the movie. Her very being is presently shaped by it. The movie does not shape a man's being. He remains the same person, but with a state. For the woman, the movie now defines her identity. Women need to know this. The squiggling, every empty book they read, all the news they hear, the contact they have with this world. For a man, it's mental Torah. But for a woman, it's destructive to her very identity. Like a mirror, she is defined by what she reflects and has contact with. Whatever she is connected to, that is what she is. And when she shines it out like a mirror, shining the reflection of what stands in front of it. Rabel said, we know this to be true. You take this, you know, trashy novel. A man reads it, I'm not sure how far he's going to get. He's going to read it, it's going to make, ugh, such a stupid book. A woman becomes the book. She's washing dishes and she's emotionally involved. She may even start crying over the characters and she becomes part of it. A woman takes in and then reflects out what she sees. That's the difference between the sun and the moon, the male and female role. And you can learn this very famous piece of Nefesh Chaya of Rav Pinkus. So when a woman would see or hear things that are immodest and inappropriate, it's not just that it's a stain on her neshama, she's defined by it. She's then going to radiate it out to all those around her. It is far worse than even if a man sees it. So we have to understand that Shmir Tzeinayim, watching and guarding our eyes, is not just for men. It's for men as is for women. Further, the Sefer Achinuch broadens this of straining after your eyes as immorality to include in 10 indulging in any of our physical desires as an end in of itself. So when we talk about Lo Sasura Chorei Einechem, it means that going after any physical pleasure, food, entertainment, whatever it is, just for its sake, without a greater purpose, that's also straining after our eyes, which is obviously something very relevant to women as well. We know, this is Source 12, Rabbi Breidowitz in the Sixth Constant Mitzvot points out that Lo Tasuru is one of the six constant mitzvot, right? It happens to be the sixth of the six constant mitzvot. That after we have Avas Hashem, after we have Yiras Hashem, we have a fear of Hashem and love of Hashem and recognition of Hashem at all times, we then come to almost the climax. All of the other mitzvot are like preparing us for Lo Tasuru, which is the practical mitzvah. And why is this true? Because we need to have all of this behind us, all of this knowledge, to be able to put into practice, as he notes in 13 in the asterisk. He says, let's do it a little bit before. Lo Tasuru is a practical mitzvah only. The first five mitzvahs lay the groundwork for our spiritual success in this world. By the time we reach the mitzvah Lo Tasuru, we already know that Hashem exists, that no other force contains any power. That Hashem is one, that we love Him, that we fear Him. We know that success is measured in terms of spiritual perfection. We know that everything else is temporal and superficial. We know that if we indulge in short-lived pleasures, we'll pay a heavy price. We know all that. But then we are suddenly overcome by temptation. Someone or something enticing is before us, and we know we should avert our gaze. We're sitting at a computer, and we know that clicking the mouse button will take us to a place where we don't belong. There's a juicy piece of gossip on the tip of our tongue. We know we should not say it. But there's still a struggle, and we tell ourselves, I know this is wrong, I know it doesn't pay, I know it's a spiritual suicide, but we feel torn. The battle rages on despite all the knowledge we know that we should do, but, and then it's too late. What happened? Why did we lose the battle? We lost the battle because we got distracted. We cannot hold on to the values we have worked so hard to incorporate into our life because we got sidetracked. Lo Tasuru does not require us to learn anything new. It requires us not to get distracted. It requires us to remain focused on what we already know and not to let our hearts and eyes lead us into territory that contradicts our Weltanschauung. And that's really the challenge that we have. In our search to make tshuva, this is where our focus has to be. Ask ourselves, do I put into practice what I know? If I know something is wrong, if I know I shouldn't press that button, if I know I shouldn't turn that page, if I know I shouldn't open this, whatever it is, do I do it anyway? Or I'm able to have that self-control and say, it's wrong. I'm not allowed to see this. It's inappropriate for me to look, and I don't, and I'm able to stop myself. This is a struggle that we all have. So the question, my friends, is, well, how do we avoid this? Like, what do we do to make sure that we don't fall into this trap? What do we do to make sure that we don't look? It's part of human nature. So, obviously, one approach is, and this is an approach that's found further on, I'll make mention of it now. This approach is to be able to manage, not put ourselves in this situation. We look for a second on source 26. Harosh l'chol agdorim shishmor adam einav v'yimishmor et einav v'yimsav shlibo shamor. Watch your eyes. Make sure that you make gedorim with your eyes. And he said, for every person, it's going to be different what the gedorim are, what I'm able to see, what I'm not able to see. The end of the Torah, Leinei Kol Yisrael, Bereish Yisbara. You want to know the beginning and the end of everything? Leinei Kol Yisrael, watch what your eyes see. And obviously, you can't go on levels, he says in 27a, Sichor Yitzchaskot, above where you're at, but you can't always stay in the same place. So if you know that certain magazines, if you know that certain whatever it is going to lead you to have certain thoughts or lead you to, you know, indulge in physical pleasures for physical pleasures alone, then, you know, if there's a button called unsubscribe. Unsubscribe yourself from those sites. If you're going to unsubscribe yourself from those sites, you're not going to put yourself in that type of new site. And those are the Gedorin. We know that this is a certain tshuva. Isn't that we have to do tshuva for the whole thing? We can't possibly do tshuva for the whole thing. Right? The Rav Deshler has a great line. He says, anytime the Gemara speaks about Yesh Kona Olamo B'Sha'achat, someone was able to acquire his world in 1 hour, they will die. Right? You can't acquire your world in 1 hour. It's a process, and the process is about Gedorim. Gedorim is setting up fences. So depending on who we are, where we're at, and what level we're at, we have to set up fences. Certain things I will not read. Certain magazines I will not bring into my house. Certain books I will not bring into my house. Certain sites on the computer I will not, you know, indulge in. Whatever it is, those are the things. I don't need to have X, Y, or Z. It's just, you know, filling up my time without any purpose whatsoever. It's just, you know, wasting my time just, you know, looking at this, you know, clothing and that clothing. I mean, how many, you know, sights do you have to have coming into you with all these bombardment of physical pleasures? And so to be able to say, I'm going to cut down, I'm not going to see A, B, or C, whatever it is. These are, I'm not going to walk. I know, remember living in L.A., I had a friend who used to teach in Valley Torah with me, from the city to Valley Torah. There were many ways to go, and one of them was through Hollywood. And she would not go through Hollywood. She said, I will take a longer route so I don't have to expose myself to all those Hollywood people that are walking around. All right, this is making it daring. It means I'm not going to drive on certain streets, even if it's going to take me 10 minutes longer, because I don't want to expose myself. Someone on that level is there. Someone else will say, you know, I can't. 10 minutes means a lot to me. Every person has to know themselves what streets are to be avoided, because you don't want to create these here rooms. So that's obviously one approach, and that approach is of complete distance. Obviously, there is other levels. I want to talk about two other ideas of how we can work on ourselves without having to be, aside from being totally stay away from. One of them is what he suggests back in Source 14. He compares it to a seeing eye dog. And it's, I think, in a very interesting connection. A seeing eye dog is trained. It's trained that it knows that certain, you know, places you'll take the blind person, and certain places you will not. There's dangerous places to go. And the seeing eye dog has that ability to know how to maneuver the streets. We need to train our eyes to be seeing eye dogs. So the first approach is just don't go down the street. The second approach is you can go down the street, but you've trained your eyes to only see what you want to see, what you feel is appropriate to see. And again, it's a training. You know, I have a friend who, kids make fun of them, that, you know, they can walk down the same street and the kids are noticing, you know, this one with dyed hair and this one with the earrings and face. And the mother's like, what are you talking about? They're walking down the same street, they're seeing the same people. The mother's eyes are very focused in on seeing what she feels is appropriate. And the kids, our kids, who are seeing the world around her. And it's like the joke how they can be walking down the same street. It's like two different streets. It's about training yourself. It's about being that seeing eye dog. But it goes much deeper than that, my friends. And I want us to listen to this, because I think this is the core, not only of Sikur Ayin, but the core of a lot in Yiddishkeit. The constant connection, which is also about the six constant mitzvahs, written by Rabbi Cooper Smith, based on the writings, the teachings of Rav Noach Weinberg Zatzal, points out the following. He says, inappropriately indulging Source 16 in our physical desires impairs our relationship with Hashem. because we are what we seek. If we spend our time pursuing our physical desires inordinately, we accentuate our physicality, which in turn distances us from Hashem, who's a totally spiritual being. And again, this is echoed in Rabbi Berkowitz in 15, where he says, if we do not take charge, our heart and eyes will necessarily find replacements for our true inner yearnings. The yearning for eternity will replace with a sense of ego. The yearning for eternal pleasure will replace with a desire for instant gratification. And that's really where it's at, my friends. We all have a drive for pleasure, period. The question is it spiritual pleasure or is it physical pleasure? Spiritual pleasure takes a lot more hard work. It takes a lot more processing. And physical pleasure is instant. It's instant gratification. You eat this, you feel great. You see this, it makes you feel good. Well, spiritual pleasure doesn't always have that same response. And this is the challenge that we have. As we explained in the Mitzvah Avas Hashem, 17a, seeking pleasure is very central to our lives because as human beings, we're all pleasure seekers. Although recognizing we want pleasure is relatively simple, getting the pleasure we want is not nearly as easy because it requires us first to properly understand who we are. If we relate to ourselves as primarily a soul, then we automatically seek spiritual pleasures. Alternatively, if we identify primarily as a body, then we'll automatically chase the satiation of our body's desires. You know, a saying that I saw recently, which has been reverberating in my head, a great refrigerator magnet, is we don't have souls. We have bodies. We are souls. And I think this is where it's at. If you relate to yourself as a physical body, and that's how you identify yourself, then you're going to be looking for the physical pleasures. If you relate to yourself as a spiritual being, you're going to look for spiritual pleasures. And this works very much with what we're dealing with our eyes. In 17b, he makes a distinction between taiva and tanug. Taiva is a pleasure for pleasure's sake. As he notes in 18, taiva causes a person to indulge in physical pleasures as an end in themselves. An example would be eating chocolate cake solely for the pleasure sensation it affords the taste bud. The Rambam writes, a person who eats food that is pleasing to his palate and that he craves, but is harmful to him, is akin, in my view, to an animal. Because we're essentially spiritual beings, indulging in our physical diets will never satisfy us. Indeed, instead, these experiences will leave us disappointed no matter how much we indulge in them. You want to have 200, you want 400, etc. However, spiritual experiences will satisfy us, will give us what we're looking for. Rabosa, this is mamish the core of what we're at. Why do our eyes look for things in this world and our eyes have a real power to get pleasure? And what does it mean to train our eyes like the seeing eye dog? It's very simple. The eyes are one of the mediums that we have. We have five chushim, we have five senses, and all of them have the ability to bring pleasure within us. The eyes are a very powerful one where what we see can bring us tremendous pleasure. You see a beautiful tree blossoming in Nisan, you say a bracha on the tree, on the blossoms, even though you don't partake of any of the fruit of the tree. Seeing itself can create spiritual pleasure that we see a blessing. We make a blessing. Spirituality in itself can bring a person great pleasure only if a person is focused on being a spiritual person. If a person is really, and that's tanuk, we have a beautiful Shabbos meal in order to elevate the Shabbos day. Taif, on the other hand, is where we have to be careful. Lo sasurach relevavcha mechreinechem. Not to stray after our eyes, is to live in a world of pleasure for pleasure's sake alone. That you can get immersed in this pleasure, and that itself fills you. And we know this to be true. Habor regein b'mayin nechashim v'akravim yeshbo. Nothing's in a vacuum. Which means, if we're not going to be filled with spiritual pleasure, our eyes are going to search out physical pleasures. And they're going to look for physical pleasures in so many different ways, and it's going to be a taiva, it's going to be a desire, it's going to become like an addiction, because I need to fill myself. As a person, the way Hashem wired us, we are wired for pleasure. If I'm not going to get spiritual pleasure, I'm going to look for it in physical pleasure. And that that's the challenge that we have. We have to be aware, first and foremost, in a Seretz Yemei Tshuva, to be able to look myself in the mirror and ask myself, how do I define myself? If I define myself as a body, then I'm going to dress, for example, as a body, and I'll, you know, attract attention to myself and wear colors that will attract attention because I'm a body and I want people to see my body. If I'm a soul, then I'm going to wear different type of clothes. I'm going to dress differently. I'm going to walk differently because I don't want to attract attention to my body. I want to bring out the soul element of me. And this goes to all the different aspects of how we behave, how we interact with the world. Am I a body or am I a soul? A body is going to look for these pleasures in one area. A soul is going to look for the spiritual pleasures in a far different venue. And this is a challenge that's always in front of us. Brings to mind the story we've mentioned before. A very sweet story of this Rosh Yeshiva who was next door neighbors to a regular balabas. And what always troubled the Rosh Yeshiva was that his children were fine, Erel Chayinim, but they didn't walk around with that glow of being Jews, of the Ashrenu Matov Chokeinu, how fortunate we are. And this regular balabas, this regular fellow's children just shone like a joy of being Jewish. And it always perturbed him, like, what was missing? So one day he got up the guts and asked him, what was missing? And this fellow said, I don't know the answer to your question, but I'll share with you my story. He says, I grew up on a secular kibbutz, and this kibbutz was known in the south of Israel to have every single pleasure in that was around. Whatever the latest and greatest pleasure was, whether it was food, whether it was whatever it was, we got it. So one time I heard that there was the latest and greatest pleasure in a store in Tel Aviv. So obviously, you know, I wanted to find out what it was, bring it down to our kibbutz. So I get off the bus and I'm trying to orient myself to see exactly where I am. And I'm able to see, you know, like diagonal from me, there is the store that was the mark of my destination. And as I am able to pinpoint the store, I see a chassid passing by who closes his eyes, turns his head, puts his hand up, and makes sure to avoid at all costs looking at the store. And I said to myself, if this guy is not even going to look, not even going to glance at what's in the store, but is completely blocking himself out from seeing anything in the store, then he must have a pleasure that's even greater than the pleasure that's found in that store. And he said, I wanted to find out what that pleasure was, and that was the beginning of my path back to Yiddishkeit. That feeling of there is no greater pleasure in this world, but the pleasure of Torah, the pleasure of being an Eved Hashem, that's what we have to imbue in ourselves and in our children. Because if we don't give that to our children, it's no wonder that they're always looking at their clocks saying, oh my gosh, when is Shabbos out? And when Shabbos is out, they're racing to their computer as fast as possible. Because for them, that's where the pleasure comes from. Or they're racing to go out Motzei Shabbos to, you know, the pizza shop or to the movies or to wherever, depending on where they're holding. Because that for them is pleasure. Shabbos is a burden. But if we can create, and this is a challenge, that the pleasure is pleasure in Shabbos itself, no one's running anywhere because Shabbos itself brings us the greatest pleasure possible. Which just reminds me, tonight I started packing up the vegetables from Shal Shuddah, so my daughter said to me, I'm not sure Rabbeinu time is over yet. What are you running for? Stop cleaning up. It's, you know, we have time. That's how we have to look at Shabbos. We have plenty of time. Don't rush out of Shabbos. Don't start cleaning up. Right, after 3-day Yontif and having to tank tonight, there's a certain pressure. Okay, relax. Enjoy Shabbos while Shabbos is, they're cleaning up and I'm teaching. So I guess it's a win-win. Let's try to understand this on even a deeper level. So we understand, my friends, how do we make sure, seeker ayin, how do we make sure that we don't fall into this trap? One is, we make a durin that we stop ourselves from putting ourselves in situations that we'll see these things. The second is to ask ourselves and to train ourselves, what are our pleasures in this world? If we get our pleasure from Shabbos, from Yontif, from enjoying the spiritual aspects, from enjoying a beautiful davening, this is where it is that we're not going to need our eyes, to look for pleasures elsewhere. I think there's a third idea as well before we get to other aspects of Seeker Ayin. And that's an idea the Ohel Moshe brings. A very famous question on Rashi. Pasuk says in 22, don't stray after your heart and your eyes. So Rashi says, Ha'ayin ro'eh, v'olev chomet, the eye sees and the heart desires. So the question is, well, if the eye sees and the heart desires, so shouldn't the pasuk be flipped? You shouldn't, you know, veer after your eyes and your heart. Why does it say your heart before your eyes? A very famous Malbim who says very simply, he says that the way it works is your eye sees something and it desires this thing. And it then sets off your heart to look for these things with your eyes. It's almost like a cycle. If your heart didn't have a desire for certain things, your eyes would never see those things at all. Adam ra'a pam achad v'itpael. A person saw something once and was very taken by it. Mekanu laba dochef haleva ta'ayim l'ro. Now, the heart pushes the eye to see. That's pshat. Ha'ayim ro'ev alev chomev. But the pshat in the pasuk, re'e levav chamrechei nechem. It starts with the eye seeing something. And then the heart is then propelling the eye, look for it more. I want more of this. It's something that fills me. Rav Ulbi Zatzal in Shirei Chumash, on the famous Medrash, where when Rivka Imenu, when she was pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, when she passed by the place of Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to go out. Farches, let's say, when he passed by the places of Torah, Yaakov wanted to go out to. And the very famous question is, they're in utero. What do they know about, you know, Avodah Zarah? Do they have a Yitzhahara? A very famous question that the Sfarim asks. So he quotes here the Das Torah, which is in 24. You can see the original. Let's do Rav Ulbi in 23. He says something that's absolutely magnificent. And we have to, it's not something you can just hear. It's something you have to hear and then process. But when you hear it and process it, and then you live it, it's like, wow, it's a gift. He says the following in 23. Ba'olam yesh chok shel magnetism. In life, there is certain rules in of nature, like the rule of gravity. You throw something up, it's going to come down. There's a rule of magnets. L'mashel, for example, you have a compass. Tamin matzpia l'tzad tzafon. Wherever I take a compass, whatever room, it's going to go face north, the northern direction. Kilokota vatzfoni yesh koch mishicha, because there is a magnetic pull to the northern side. And, you know, however it works in the world of magnets, I have no idea. And he says, Klahu, shekol ma sheyesh begashmios in the arrow, yesh beruchnios. Just like there's this idea of a magnetic field in the world of physical, there's a magnetic field in the world of spiritual. Yesh gam beruchnios yesh sedem magneti. Adam holeth beruchov. Person walks on the street. Ulefeto, my remember Shoah. And, you know, they're walking, you know, totally oblivious, head down. Suddenly they look up. And boom, right when they look up, they see something inappropriate. Zeno Mekra, it's not by accident. Of course he didn't know at that moment something inappropriate would pass by him. There was a magnetic pull that he's not even aware of, that is why he picked up his head at this moment. It's a magnetic pull of the Yitzhahara that would pull to impurity without even knowing it. And just like a magnet that doesn't see the northern part, but is nevertheless pulled there. And the Yitzhak Tov also has a magnet. And the Yitzhak Tov will be able to pull you in the ways of positivity. How you work yourself, how you wire yourself, what your desires are, who you are, what's important to you, all of that is going to create a spiritual reality. Yaakov Avinu, without even coming to this world, was pulled magnetically to the Beit of Torah, Shem Ever, and Esav to Beit Avodah Zarah. And again, there's a lot more to talk about. That's not us here today. But we have to understand that this magnetic pull works within me. That if I'm walking down the street and I suddenly see something inappropriate, I have to ask myself, why is it that I saw that? Why did I work myself this way? Why am I wired this way? In what way can I change myself? And lehefech, if I walk down the street and I'm always drawn to Dvarim Shekedusha, and I always see good in the things around me, that's also an indication. So when we're talking about losasurach re'levavchem v'kreinechem, a seeker ayin, how do I work on myself? I can't avoid it. I picked up my head and boom, I saw this. Like, what do you want from me? The answer is, it has to start way before you're picking up your head. The answer is, and this is the avalta of the Yeser Shrejuvah, the avalta of our whole lives, to work on ourselves, that we're drawn to positivity, we're drawn to Kedusha, that my whole life, my whole being, what I think about, and it's really true, what you think about is what's going to draw you in certain directions. If you're always thinking about X, you're going to be drawn to seeing X. And this is where the avalta really is found. Now, having said this, we have to understand that Sikur Ayin is not only seeing Pritzos. It's also in 29, people are naturally curious and are interested in knowing about the comings and goings of their neighbors. That's exactly why our forefathers, during their 40 years in the desert, encamped in such a manner that would ensure the greatest amount of privacy. We have an obligation to respect the right of privacy of others. When passing someone's window, we must resist the temptation to look in. Seeker Ayin, now let's broaden it a little bit, means do not look into places that are none of your business. Don't look into people's cars, don't look into people's mail, don't look into people's email, don't look into things that don't belong to you. You're working with people at an office, what right do you have to go through their desk or to go through the memos that are on their desk? It's their private things. And in any time a person's in a compromising situation, do not stare at them. A person lolling and being taken to an ambulance, a person in an emergency room, but people having a fight in a restaurant, don't stare at them. You're at a shear and someone walks in late. You know how all eyes follow them wondering, why are they late? Why have a... Leave them alone. Wherever you see a kid's having a tantrum in a supermarket, don't stare at the mother and the kid. You know she's going through a hard time. To stare at her just makes her feel worse. Oh my gosh, everyone's staring at me. Ignore them. Seeker Ayin, gazing, means through your looks, do not put a person in a position where they feel uncomfortable. Someone's eating spaghetti, it gets all over them. Don't look, right? Give them the privacy that they deserve. This is part of Seeker Ayin, obviously, not reading emails and the like, which don't belong to us. But there is another aspect of Seeker Ayin, that's 33. And that the Omosha of Shaitim and Shlita brings down, that Lamanis Mecha Parshat Nazir L'Parshat Sota L'mar L'cha Shekol Ares Sota B'Kil Kulai Yazir Atzvo Min Hayayin. When a person has the sees a Sota in her state of desecration, they should immediately separate themselves from wine. And he said, a person who walks down the street and has seen this in front of them, they should know that this is not random, that they saw this. They have to take action and be able to deal with it. Even though it wasn't their wife that's an Isha Sota, Achshava Lav Lishamer L'Nafsho Mipneihem, he nevertheless has to learn the correct lesson and to save himself for anything in the future. And that's part of what Seeker Ayin is about, 34 and 35, of being able to learn from every situation that's around us, be able to learn from the people around us, whether it's our friends, whether it's the people we come in contact with casually, whether it is even the nature, even the Baalei Chaim, to be able to learn from the experiences that happen around us. That's part of Seeker Ayin in the positive way. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us in certain situations, and our job is to be able to learn from these situations and to be able to grow from these situations. And as we know, the Ish L'Reyehu comes out in 37, Al-Pia Yikaron Shekol Mera, there is a basic principle that every event, HaMizdamein La'adam, that a person encounters, Mechuvam Bashkacha Prati La'adam Zeh, is tailor-made for this person. V'lachein hadavar mechayvo ishi, and is a call to you individually. And this explains why by Esther, how do I know if it wasn't for this that you came to Malchus? If a situation comes your way, you have to ask yourself, why is this situation in my way? So this is really the positive aspect of Seeker Ayin. You see, a friend's item got lost. If you're able to see this thing, so be able to return it. whatever, you know, you encounter in your life, this is a tremendous opportunity for you to do chesed, like Hashem is mamish planting this in front of you. The Nefesh Chaya, Rav Pinkas Atzal, gives a few examples. He says, you can imagine, Bachrim are sitting at a table, and one boy says, oh, I could really use hot tea. And the tea is lukewarm. To get up and make him a hot cup of tea, does that take much? It's able to have the seeker ayin in a positive way. For the sin of seeker ayin means I had the opportunity to respond to situations that I saw with my eyes, and I didn't respond. Sometimes a woman, 39, meets another who's feeling gloomy and bitter. Every woman understands that a single smile from a friend can turn around the suffering woman's mood, and that's the true mitzvah to do so, even if the suffering woman is not about to go off the deep end. Even if there's a looming tragedy and needs to be averted, it's still a mitzvah to cheer the woman up and give her a nice warm smile to make her feel better. These are opportunities that Hashem has coming knocking at our door. That's what it means when Rav Maizel says, you see the load of your friend's donkey, you know, having trouble. It means that you see, we don't have donkeys today. You see people are in trouble. You see your neighbor's overwhelmed. You see someone's not feeling well. Step in. Help out. Be able to use your eyes to, if you are put in this situation where you know of a situation where a person needs help, to be able to respond appropriately. On this level mean, Hashem, you gave me opportunities to be able to see things, to be able to do chasadim, to be able to utilize my ability to help, and I ignored those calls. Like Esther saying, you know, Mordechai is saying, if you're not going to respond, someone else is going to respond. You've lost the opportunity. You know, it's so interesting. I had the schutz of giving the shir today, Shabbat Shuva, in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and a woman called me a mamish right after Shabbat. And she said to me, she says, I will keep the details as vague as possible. She says, I come from a country which is very much affording people privacy. I don't, you know, mess into people's business. And she says, I came back from the shir, and I went up to my daughter's room, my 16-year-old daughter, and her friend was sitting there. Again, we're trying to keep this as vague as possible. And you know how many 16-year-olds are Ramat Beit Shemesh? Hundreds, my friends, trust me. And she says her friend was sitting there, and I saw that she had bruises all over her leg. She said, normally, I wouldn't have even looked. But just now, talking about the sheer seeker ayin of gazing, of looking, of taking opportunities to see and act, she said, I was drawn to those legs, and I asked my daughter to leave the room, and I started schmoozing with the daughter's friend, and it came out that she is suffering from abuse by whoever, doesn't try to be vague here. And she says, now I feel like I have an opportunity, this girl comes from a large family, to be able to help her and her siblings from whatever situation we're in. And she says, thank you. Like, maybe the shiur was just for the sake of this girl, to be able to look at that God puts us in certain situations at certain times, and our response has to be, what can I see? How can I grow from these situations? Seeker ayin is being able to have our eyes open. And this is the challenge. God gave us such beautiful eyes to see. We can use them to mamish see things that are perversion, that take our beautiful neshama and mamish destroy it. Or we can see opportunities to say brachas. We can use our eyes, opportunities to help other people. We can use our eyes to have understanding of how I can make people's lives better. And we're held accountable for the way we've destroyed our eyes, and we're held accountable if we have this opportunity to see and we fail to see. We have the opportunity to build and we fail to build. We have to be able to use our eyes in the appropriate way. And this ultimately, as Rav Gamliel points out, again in the Sefer on Einayim and Tifayit Chazkut, he says, why do we sin? We sin because we forget that we're in front of Hashem. We forget that there's a Da Malam Imcha, Ayin Ro'av, Ozen Shemav, V'chol Ma'asecha, B'Sefer Nachtovim. Remember what's above you, an eye that sees, an ear that hears, and everything's written down in the book. If we would remember at all time that Hashem is watching, and that Hashem has given us eyes that we could watch in the positive way, not the judgmental way, we too can take our eyes and utilize them to be able to see the messages that Hashem is sending us, to be able to take the brachos that Hashem is sending us and create a tremendous kiddush Hashem in this world. I'd like to end with a beautiful story that Rav Ashir in his Living Emunah Volume 3 brings down, brand new sefer, very beautiful sefer, like the other two. Albeit he has a different message that he takes in the story, but I think that the messages likewise, many messages you get from the story, one of them is, open your eyes and see the wonders of Hashem and how we have to grab opportunities. To make a long story short, the story is of a boy, Lo Aleinu, who's sick and goes through an operation in Europe. It doesn't help. He needs another operation. The operation costs $130,000. It's an enormous amount of money from Shashiva to try to help the family raise. The boy is getting sicker. At this point, the doctor has to come here to Eretz Israel to do the operation, lives with Bnei Brak, and that costs another $30,000, and like this is, the boy is just getting worse. So one day, the Shiva gets a call from this boy's sister. She says, we decided to live in Beit Shemesh. Husband's a Rebbe, six kids. We're going to put up an apartment for sale, $130,000, whoever can give us cash. Doesn't matter. We'll figure out a place to live. We have to do this operation. They find a buyer. Rav Shiva calls the doctor, fly him in, and now it's just $30,000 to raise. So he sends the bachurim out to go and try, you know, in Israel they have ramcos, they have cars with speakers on it to try to raise money. So they send the kids out in taxis to people's houses, and some of the boys call them and say that the taxi driver wants them to make a stop. That in one of his earlier rounds in the morning, someone forgot a little suitcase he wants them to deliver to the hotel. And Rosh Hashiva said, no, 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 you're not getting involved with this. And again, taxi driver is very insistent, and the Rosh Hashiva is nervous because, like, who knows what's in that suitcase, right? Boys in Japan, it's clearly still in our mind. So he says, bring it to me. The taxi brings the suitcase. Taxi driver comes with the boys to Rosh Hashiva, brings the suitcase, a little case. And he opens it up, and sure enough, whose case is it? None other than the doctor, who left all of his, equipment, over $40,000 worth of stuff, many of it that he himself has made, that's irreplaceable. They call him up, they said they found it, he's so grateful for them. And Rav Shiva tells the story of how his sisters, you know, sold this apartment so that they could have this operation, and he waived the $130,000 fee. And he did the operation, and thank God the boy got better. The end of the story, and this is where you see that Hashem is watching over us at all times, and we need to be able to open our eyes in the right way. His family has no place to live, so they decide they don't want to live in Beit Shemesh. They'd like to live in Yerushalayim. The real estate agent takes them around. You can't buy much, as people know, for $130,000. They see an apartment, they fall in love with it. The guy says, how much money do you have? They say, we can put $130,000 down. He says, it's not a joke, you know, this apartment's worth much more. They tell the whole story, how they sold the apartment, that's why they have the cash. He says, I know the story. I'm the taxi driver that found that suitcase. He says, I just got an inheritance for my mother to live in a villa up north somewhere. You know what, I'll sell you the apartment for the $130,000. The way Hashem orchestrates everything in this world, we have to open our eyes to see it. Any situation that comes to us in front of us, it's a situation for us to respond to. And that's the challenge that we have. We say every morning, the bracha v'keach Yifrim, Hashem, open my eyes. Hashem, enable me to use the bracha of my eyes to help other people, to see the messages that you're sending me, to be able to use the direction that you're leading me in life, Hashem, and not, God forbid, to use my eyes to just indulge in the physical world for physical pleasure themselves. And we say, and ask myself, what are opportunities that I have just indulged in my eyes and pleasure for pleasure's sake? Am I living a life of taiva, or am I living a life of tanuk? Am I living a life of body, or am I living a life of soul? Am I also living a life that I'm able to take the opportunities that Hashem has knocking on my door, and to be able to build with them and to come closer for me and for Klal Yisrael, to come closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu? Wish everybody a Gemar Chasima Tova, and that we should have a good Gaben Shura.